All right, so this is Trade Secrets, podcast number 2. And today we have Stephanie Newlands. You're going to love this, Steph. Founding partner at Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Ontario.
Wow.
We're throwing the Ontario out now. See? Woo. Don't even know if that's like a legal DBA for us, but we're going to use it anyways.
I'm already sweating.
I've asked Steph to come on. You know, again, we're going to talk a little bit about, a lot about online leads today, but Steph's been working very closely with us for a long time. And we really built our business on learning how to do this by using Stephanie to make sure that it worked. And so she's, you know, obviously this is a big part of her business, but Steph is an excellent realtor overall. She ranks typically in the top 1%, you can correct me if I'm wrong, of the Toronto Real Estate Board. And again, it's unbelievable that you've closed, you know, tens and tens of millions of dollars of digital leads. So not many people better to listen to than you when it comes to this.
Happy to be here. Thanks for the warm intro.
It's always so weird, like doing a bio, right? You're just like, oh, me? Like,
let me gloat. Me. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I threw on here, welcome, yeah. Steffers. Yeah. So I just, before we get started today, I just wanted to, you know, a couple things that I think are really important to sort of lay the foundation for. One is that, as we talked about, we're going to be talking about online leads, but there should really be a sense of urgency for all your leads. Like, you should be treating them, you know, digital leads are something you like kind of jump at really quickly, but you should treat everyone like that. I mean, they deserve it.
For sure. And I think one of the things that sets realtors apart in an industry that's inundated with thousands of real estate agents is the attention to your clients and not feeling sheepish about how quickly you're responding to them, I think is something that I've always really leaned into, because they want to hear from you, especially in a market where it's fast paced and it's moving. If you wait a day or two, even a couple hours, it can make all the difference. So whether it's an online lead, a personal lead that's with you for life, I would never be sheepish about getting back to someone really quickly.
Yeah, and Candace and I talked about this in the database podcast that we did, which is, you know, I'm a big systems guy, and I think a lot of the times people think just they've got this like automation set up and they can just kind of like fall back on it and rely on things to do their work for them. It doesn't work that way. It's supportive, but if you don't have a human element to it, and I think you have you treat the digital stuff with a lot of human side, you're not going to succeed.
Yeah, and the systems we have are incredible and amazing, so that if you aren't on top of it every single day, you know that they're being, especially if they're a colder lead, they're being touched in a certain way. But like you said, there's a human element, and real estate is about human-to-human interaction and your service and you. So even if it's just tweaking a generated email to make it sound like it's coming from you to them and personalized, it really sets you apart, I think.
So the three things we're going to talk about, again, they're going to be kind of meandering through the conversation today, but we're going to, you know, the three keys to digital ads or to digital leads and closing them are money. Mm-hmm. It's not a cheap game. I mean, this isn't going to be something that most people succeed at for the most part because they won't spend enough money at it. Two is the systems and processes you have in place to follow up. And then three is the mindset, because I can't tell you, I mean, it's a great thing for the people that decide this is going to be an important part of their business, but hearing that online leads are bad leads is like music to my ears and probably yours as well, because it's just stupid. It's a short-sighted, you're costing yourself in the end of the day, right?
For sure. And I think you go after the online leads, hopefully as a supplementary part of your business, right? When you're really wanting to grow your business, because you want to make sure, A, when you get that lead, if they do catch, you're more than capable and confident to take them on and know what you're doing. And so I think that the online lead approach can seem like it never works out, but it's a numbers game. And some of my lifelong, most loyal clients now are online leads. When we rewind the clock back, that's where we started and that's where we met. So I would just encourage people, if you are doing it, you just got to stick with it. Set your process up, whatever that process is, but don't let it get you down if you don't get responses or if you get told to get lost or F off. That's, that's fine.
Never happened. Come on.
No, but you might get people that are like, I'm not interested. I reached out once. Please leave me alone.
Sure.
But
yeah, well, I'll touch on that a little bit for sure.
For sure. You just gotta stick with it and set up that process and keep believing in it, because when it works, you'll be kind of hooked for life, even if it's one a year.
Well, I talk about that a lot whenever I do training in this. I'm like, I'm scared to not spend money. Like when if I'm spending less than $5,000 a month, like it's scary to me most people, it's scary to spend the money. It's scary to me to not spend money, because we see how much it works, right?
Absolutely. And your clients want to see it too, right? Even if you're working with repeat clients.
That's
or
the best
listings,
part. It's a win-win.
Yeah, they want to see that you're active, and these ads are not only just capturing potentially new business, but they're also reinforcing the business you have. So it's a win-win.
So it's funny, because I think, you know, when you look at why someone's successful, and when we talked to Candace, she comes from a corporate background, so she was forced to use a CRM and, you know, got really comfortable with that process. And so when she moved over into real estate, it wasn't something that was like unnatural to her. You know, your background probably speaks a lot to, you know, why you have a good mentality. You know, you didn't come into this business with a golden spoon and working with $10 million clients right away. You had to work your way through and probably dealt with a lot of clients that were a waste of time and not great, but you sort of treated them well. So tell us a little bit about your background, like where the different areas you've worked in. You know, where did your leads come from initially, and what did you do to follow up with them?
Yeah, so I think the starting point here is that when I first got my real estate license, which was, 12 or 13 years ago now, I reached out to everybody in my database. Instagram wasn't a thing. It was slowly becoming a thing, but I reached out on Facebook, on LinkedIn. I put my name and my face out there as a rental agent, and I got my feet wet with doing a ton of rentals, and I was the lease queen at Private Service Realty for a couple months in a row, still my claim to fame. And just that turned into, by nature of the rental market starting to really tick up in prices, turned into people getting rid of their rental, buying their first place, and then they sell their first place and they buy their home. Oh, they've gotten married, now they're having kids. So segued into the kind of like the lifelong process, but definitely ran around doing a lot of work, and sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't, but it was a great way to get started as well as learn the business. So for a lot of new agents, when they ask me what to do, I think a rental, of course, the commission is not the same, but the process is. You show a place the same, you do your research.
The referrals are the same too.
The referrals are the same. Yeah. You find the lockbox is the same. All these stepping stones that build the confidence that you can then take on a client that might be $5 million and $500,000 condo, it turns into you've got the confidence in the foundation. You can service them both, provided that you know enough about the areas and the property that they're looking in.
Did you have a limit? Like, you obviously, you know, you weren't taking people on lease showings in Oakville, or were you? Like, what were your?
No, I tried to set up like a, you know, an area, but I hung out in North York sometimes and kind of went wherever people kind of took me within reason. Obviously, like if things were in Oakville, I wasn't driving to Oakville for a lease showing. But that's true probably regardless of where you're building your business, is you want to be an expert in a certain area, not necessarily a neighborhood expert all the time, just because inventory is so low now. I think you've got to kind of spread your boundaries to try and help people. And a lot of times people will come to you, especially when they're starting out, want to look in the East End. I also want to look in the West End. So just by nature there, being able to kind of service all those areas, but definitely the confidence piece to then kind of gain your momentum, putting yourself out there, reminding people that you're in the business, asking people for business can be awkward and not something everyone likes to do, but you just have to keep reminding them that you are someone they can go to for help.
And you also worked a little bit in pre-construction?
Yep, I did. That's where I started, actually. I sold timeshares or fractional real estate up in Muskoka and then in Victoria, BC. Then I moved back and I worked at a church conversion project down in Leslieville, or not Leslieville, it was more the beaches. And then I went and worked for PSR, where I was helping on the sales side, sell Fashion House at the time and 60 Colburn. So I had a lot of fun doing that, but it really just reinforced that I wanted to get my real estate license and do resale as well.
And were you hustling leads then too? Like, were people coming
absolutely
in?
Yeah. So the pre-construction world if you're on a sales floor, again, not a glamorous job.
People don't
job.
Remember this either. Like, no. Fashionists took years to sell, right? It wasn't like now it's blowing out.
You sat in the office and I maybe moved one unit every 2 weeks because people were slowly coming in because it wasn't a blowout sale in the first. It was a different time and that might come back. But there's also, you know, the component of in pre-construction, not to get too far off topic, but it's a lead, right? Even if they're interested in that place or not, if they buy that condo, that might mean they have to sell their other condo. Oh, now their sister needs to sell their condo. So it's just maximizing and making sure that you're connecting with every single person you meet.
It's, you know, I'm not like a big, you know, touchy-feely, rah-rah-rah, like, mentality person. We probably need to be more of that because obviously your brain is the most important thing you've got going for you, right? It's also the hardest thing to switch. But whenever you sit down and you have conversations with people that are successful, there's a different type of mentality. Again, hearing that person say online leads are bad, or it's really difficult to get people to switch their hat. But if you are, like, if you can be introspective, if people are listening to this and hearing, like, you know, Stephanie sitting there and doing one deal every 2 weeks, and then hearing us having to hear someone say, like, open housing isn't worth your time. It's like, you got to be kidding me, right? Like,
and all it takes is one, right?
Exactly.
So it's like, again, open housing, I've met some of my best longest-term clients at open houses because you're anytime you can get in front of someone and you've got your confidence and you know you can do it, I just think it's an opportunity. And it doesn't mean you have to sell everywhere you go, but if you know that every person is a potential client, it's, you know, you're constantly around people, but you have to believe that even if you do 30 open houses and some of the time nobody would come in, at some point someone's going to walk in and have a long conversation with you and you've got
them. But it's the mentality just to get there, right? And you know, people have to check their mentality, you know, in whatever piece of their business it is. If you don't, this isn't a rocket science business. It's clear what works and what doesn't. We know open housing works. We know digital ads work. We know that, you know, sending birthday cards work. And people that sit there and say, like, well, no, that doesn't work for me. It doesn't. Well,
you have to give it for like anything. You have to give it time. You have to give it your energy and you have
to. But if you have the wrong mindset, you're already done.
Of course. It's an uphill battle from the start. But I do think that if you're starting out and you think it's going to be easy and the leads and the money are just going to flow right to you, it might for the first year and then it comes to a complete standstill. So you have to have the hustle mentality right out of the gate, in my opinion, to be really successful in this industry.
Yeah, and again, there's always parallels, right? So Candace, when we talked about the database, she had to have two jobs, right? When she first started in her real estate career, she was working as a waitress and she was working in real estate.
Of course.
Yet with two jobs, she was still investing heavily in her real estate business. So it's amazing, like, the difference, the same thing we're talking about today, which is you're going to have to spend money to make make the digital side of your business work, right? Now, it's easy for us to talk because we've experienced, like, the good part about it. But when we first started, I remember, I don't think it took us 6 months before we got a single deal done.
Yeah.
And it was just like, we never gave up. We knew it was going to work. We knew that there were leads coming in. And, you know, again, I think that's what's important about training is you have to trust the people you're listening to. We're not guiding these people on a bad trajectory here. It's going to work for them.
Yeah.
But we have to set expectations that if you don't get your mind right, that this is going to cost you money. And if you're not willing to invest in your business, then this isn't something you should probably be doing right out of the gates. But, you know, again, it's something that is an opportunity for people. And
you want to, again, lay the foundation of the right mentality. And if you are going to be considering doing online leads, which I think, again, is a great supplement to your business, to grow your business. But, you know, you might 1 year spend X amount of dollars on your online leads and then hit one deal and it paid for itself. But then that one deal turns into five deals. So you just have to, you just have to keep at it and keep moving forward and understand that it is a numbers game because everybody's online now. But if you're not doing it, as I say, like your clients that you are working with want to see you doing it, and it makes you look active and it makes you look busy. And I think it's an important part of your business if you are looking to grow it.
So I've got some more specific questions. Again, some of them we can fly through, some of them, you know, we can spend more time on. But let's just start off with, you know, this is obviously a consistent part of your business. What percentage of your business do you think comes from online?
I would say probably at this point 25 to 30%.
Which is, so again, it's like, you can't break the mold. It's an 80-20 business, 70-30 business in your respect. Like, it's 70% or 80% is coming from referrals and repeat, 30% coming from digital. Having said that, when you get to be a big agent like you are, you know, that's still hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. You know, it's a significant
income for sure. So.
And I think, you know, again, it's really hard to speed up your referrals. Like, you can really nurture your database. You can't force people to sell and buy. You can obviously do a really great job and try and increase the number of referrals. But if you really want to accelerate your business, it's hard to do it other than doing this, right? If you want to go to like another leap.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's definitely something that, again, just as you're growing your business and you've got the referrals happening, it's all just going to start to kind of work together. And these online leads that feel cold and a little bit daunting at the beginning, at the end of the day, if you get in front of them and you hit it off, like, there's no reason they can't become your tight, recurring referral business. So,
I've always liked them because I always thought, again, other people are better at this than me, but I always felt that there was like a stress level between like working with my friends, like they felt like they owed it to me.
Absolutely.
Or this online person is like choosing you.
Yeah.
It's like a really nice like experience when
and
it
they,
works. Right?
And they feel safe. I think there's an element of they feel safe with you because they don't have to put on a show. They can say exactly how they feel. There's no worrying about your time. They're not too concerned about your time or wasting your time if you're their friend or their sister or their cousin. And I think that as long as you can, you know, break the ice and become really comfortable with small talk and talking to strangers and breaking that, you know, potential weirdness of them not knowing who you are, I think it's, you know, a good opportunity to expand.
And I mean, we'll talk probably a little bit about this as we go through, but, you know, I don't love small talk, but one of the nice things is if you're a real pro at this business and you know your product, then you can talk the whole time about what's going on in the neighborhood. Like, that's where it really helps to be a professional. It's like, I know this property sold last week, or I know this one's going, like, you know, this offer date's coming on this day. Or
I think there's subtleties that I've kind of trained myself over time of, okay, small talk, but not a cheesy small talk, but trying to get enough information out of them. You can usually read people pretty quickly if they want to give you more or they don't, and really being intuitive to how they're handling handling the responses is definitely going to dictate how you continue.
But I'm sure
if
you're on a showing with somebody, you know, you obviously do, you know, if you're working with buyers, they're all over the place. I'm sure you're talking a little bit about what you know about the neighborhood, right? Like, you probably spend a lot of time on that. What do you know about other properties that are up or have sold, or your favorite restaurant? You want them to know that, like, I get this area. You're in good hands here.
Absolutely. And like, where there's a school, there's a park. Oh, there's a new development going in there, or what things are even renting for, and just kind of pick up on what piques their interest, because they will typically, someone will respond to something that you're saying if it's relevant to why they're there. But I think you just, as I say, like the small talk, I didn't mean it to like, you know, too cheesy, but just getting a sense of, you know, breaking that ice of they can say whatever they want in front of you. And especially if you've established that you're not the listing agent of that property, then, and you're there with their interest in mind only, sometimes you even point out something negative about the property.
100%.
And that I find really opens the trust, right? Yep. Because they're like, this isn't just a salesy person just trying to sell me this house. They actually care and want me to be aware of this, that, even if it's not about the house specifically.
Or tell them about another property you saw earlier in the day. Like, you know what? I actually like this one better, or, you know.
Yeah, or there's things about this one that one didn't have. And then they just kind of, their backs go down and they see that you're really knowledgeable and an asset to them versus something they need to try and push away.
Especially, you know, one of the things that when I was new in the business that I was, and even still, like, I mean, I don't do showings anymore, but sometimes I tap in and I'm in an area that I'm not super comfortable with. And you know, your biggest dread is that they're going to grill you on like, what have you done here? What do you know about this? I know, but the way I've always sort of approached that is by knowing certain things, and as I'm letting them know about, you know, I know this house or know this neighborhood or a building or this restaurant, then they don't feel like they need to ask you anymore. You've cut them off at the pass. You know what I mean?
You're proving yourself in every moment of that first showing, and I'm not saying that to make it
incredibly
intimidating, but it's more
But this is reality of digital leads, is these people, you've got a real short opportunity here to prove yourself to them. And so there's certain things you should do.
Yeah. You've won half the battle. Because the biggest thing I would say is an online lead is if they are willing to meet with you, they understand that they're going to meet with a real estate agent. And then it's up to you to take it from there because you know that they're interested in potentially buying or potentially meeting with someone they don't know.
And so I've got a couple more questions before we get to that. And then I'm going to grill you on that a little bit because I think it's the most important part, right? The process of, you know, the pre-meeting, the at the showing, which we've talked about a little bit now, and then sort of post-showing, I think is, again, it's where you're going to win and lose the business, right? But a couple of questions that I have for you. One is, I think it's really important because, again, I've been on some of the fun sides of this with you as well, but I feel like there's this conception that like online leads are always gonna be like the barrel, like the bottom of the barrel, right? So why don't you tell us about some of your really great experiences, some of the deals you've done, some of the people you've met through this, through online.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fair to assume that maybe that there's a conception that those are, you know, people that reach out online or aren't qualified or don't even live in the area that they're just not a qualified buyer. But I would caution that that's actually, in my experience, not true. And again, it's numbers based and volume of sifting through hundreds and thousands of leads over time. But some of the biggest transactions I've ever done have come from online leads. And again, you establish it early and it takes you, you become their confidant.
Tell us an experience. I mean, I know that, like, tell us about the one on 400 Wellington. I remember that was a great one just because it's a funny one, right? It was like reach out, showing, offer one night, 50. I mean, again, like, it was just a great, great commission, obviously, and a great client. And there was different reasons why they didn't want to work with someone they knew.
There was a listing a couple of years ago on Wellington, and it was a $2.5 million listing. It had been sitting for a while. We were running the ads on the listing. And a gentleman reached out, wanted to see the property that day. I ran over, it was right across from the office. And within, 20, 30 minutes, I could tell he was very interested. So prepped him for what an offer would look like, made sure he wasn't already working with an agent before I went on the showing. I'll just backtrack that a little bit.
We'll get into that in a second.
Yeah,
of the
that's
process,
just something with an online lead you want to be careful of to protect your own time. But met him there and it was smooth. And I think in that situation, it was, a high net worth individual. There was some privacy with me that he had, and he didn't know me from anybody else, but obviously
no politics, no drama, nothing.
And hopefully within that first meeting, he knew that I sold a lot in the King West area, and I knew what I was talking about, and could guide him on properly protecting him with right inclusions in an offer and things to look out for. But I think, as I say, when it's it doesn't necessarily mean they're the bottom of the barrel, first-time buyers that can, hardly afford anything in the city. I think there's people out there that are really looking for that arm's length person that they can have the privacy and trust with without having to open it up to, even if you're casually looking and you're a real estate agent, and I'm not trying to deter family, but there's no privacy there, right? If you're going to look at a $3 million house and your best friend's your realtor, you can probably rest assured that now all your best friends know you're looking at a $3 million.
Well, and listen, there's a lot of 1,000,000%. There's a lot of times where a friend will have three realtor friends, and because of that, they'll say like, "I can't go with any of you guys because this is just a bad situation for me."
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, and you want to have someone who's outside your circle so that you didn't choose between friends, and also, but I think it just goes to reinforce our point, which is don't assume anything.
You're going to get everything top of the, and
you will get the bottom of the barrel and people who aren't serious and who have never had a mortgage pre-approval done and don't have the money for a down payment. But then you might also get the people who are more than qualified and looking for that person.
And you said something, again, we were obviously, pretty fortunate to be in an area that had, a decent amount of properties in it. You might be in a low-rise community that has like one listing. But one of the keys that you said there, which I think is an important thing when you're running online leads, is like run them close to where you're comfortable going, right? You know,
of course.
If all your ads that you're running, it doesn't have to be your own listings. We'll talk about that in a second, but you know, we used to reach out to other realtors if we didn't have listings and ask them for permission to advertise. Mm-hmm. But we would do it in a really we would try to do it in a way that all the listings were close by to us, so that when you were sitting at the office, you could run over. And it was, so there's some strategy to that as well, because then you don't feel like you're wasting as much. If you go there and the person doesn't show up,
it's not. Yeah. And I've had that happen a ton of times, but it's, you know, I can get into that later, but I do the follow-ups to make sure we're meeting, because you don't know these people, send them calendar invites, but you might get stood up. It's like dating.
Yeah.
And you might get stood up every once in a while. And as long as you just let it roll off your back, take it for what it is and try and make your process tighter next time to confirm that you are meeting, then, you know, it won't bog you down. But also just to the point of keeping it, you know, at running listings and advertisements of not only places where you could conveniently be at, but things that you can conveniently and have the education and the background to speak to.
Because exactly.
The last thing you want to do is meet someone in a property where you know nothing about the house, the condo, the area, the schools, the parks. That's not,
they're going to sniff through that real
they're,
quick.
They're going to feel that out unless you're a really, really good bullshitter.
So how much do you spend on online leads? Like, what's kind of budget do you spend? Where do you spend that money?
So this actually is part and parcel to listings as well. So typically about $1,000 to $1,500 per listing. Again, back in the blue days, it was advertising other people's listings, but I think at least $1,000 to $1,500 per listing, so hopefully a couple $1,000s per month.
And this is a win-win. I mean, again, this is where it's challenging when you're talking to people that don't have listings, because there's no win for the client. But you know, when we're sitting in listing presentations, and we train on this heavily, is that that's your differentiator. When you sit down with people and you can tell them you're going to get 50,000 impressions on their property, a lot of the times that's the difference why they choose us, right? So they're expecting exposure. But it's really for you. Like, it's how you're going to get leads.
It's the exact same way as an open house, right? Yeah. Clients, sellers want open houses the same way sellers want online ads run. It's really all coming back to the realtor. The chances of that person buying, that walks through the open house, buying that house, it happens, but it's less common. Same way people coming through on the leads, they may not actually even be qualified on that place. They just think it looks cool. They want to know more about it and see where it sells, and you end up working with them. So to me, it's an important part of your listing, and happy to elaborate on that when we do that topic, but it's definitely something that's coming back to you full steam.
And again, just, you know, having worked with Steph, I can tell you, and managing the CRM, I think you've got like 12 or 13,000 people in the CRM now. And I think that's even, it was a lot higher and just been, you know, cleaned up over the last little bit. But, you know, again, spending to expect a return, and even at 30% of your business, you know, spending $4,000 or $5,000 a month on digital ads. You know, again, I think if you're spending $1,000, you could probably get away with that, but it's just going to be slower in terms of what you should expect in return. You know, it can't be, if you're spending $1,000 a month, it's probably not going to be like the heart of your business.
Of course.
But that just gives people a sense. I mean, we sat down with a marketing company yesterday that's doing ads for the developments, for the new developments. Their budget's $25,000 a month, and that's what they would like. If you were a platinum agent, it'd be $25,000 a month. So some of the platinum spending $75,000 on a project. So, you know, again, you have to understand there's 55,000 realtors. We say out loud that there's not that many successful ones, like, you know, 1%. I mean, there's still a lot of people. There's still thousands of people out there that are willing to spend money. So this isn't easy. There's a lot of noise. But it is something that, again, you know, if you stick with it, it's got a really great return. And again, I think Stephanie's, some of her best clients, lifelong clients now, are people that you met through online. So that's great.
For sure.
Tell us about the processes you use. What systems do you use, Steffers?
So in terms of the systems, I'm obviously using everything that all of our realtors have access to, which are awesome. I know there's a lot of automation and back end that goes in there that I always can see and watch. But I, in addition to that, as kind of circling back to what we talked about at the beginning, is making sure that I'm always there too, because a dark hole that I think a lot of realtors fall into, is relying too much on the drips and relying too much on the auto campaigns. I don't discount that they're great, but I do think that
you got to step in.
These clients, regardless of if they're your close returning clients and referrals, or if they're a colder lead, you've got to step in there every once in a while. So I've, in terms of the systems and processes, obviously making sure they're all in the neighborhood tracking part of the database is huge. So you can make sure they're getting the right listings that cater to what they're looking for. But I also make sure they're set up with either the Resly account that I use, which is an auto.
That's sort of a secondary. We'll talk about that when we get through. That's our next question. So we'll get into the process where you, once you connect, you kind of move them into a bit of a different area, right?
For sure. And then just in terms of the process then of like follow-up is making sure that if they leave me their phone number, if they leave me their email address, whoever they've chosen to be contacted, it doesn't always say, but if they leave you your phone number and it's a legitimate phone number, that's a pretty strong lead in my opinion. Don't throw their phone numbers around right now. Spam's never been higher. I get 30 yeah. phone calls from spammers. So it usually means they're interested in that property that they've reached out on. And a lot of people will be recurring, so you'll start to see the same emails coming back. But when they drop their phone number in there, that's usually when it signals me that they're pretty serious. So you can give them a quick call, follow up with a text, follow up with an email, and just make sure you're giving them more information than what they're getting on that property search, right? So go to the listing, look at when offers are being held. Maybe it was last night, maybe it's in 2 hours, maybe it's tomorrow. Giving them information that they don't have access to, I think, is key, and being quick to deliver that information. So again, sometimes you'll be on the road or doing something else or out for dinner, just flip them a quick note saying, thanks so much for reaching out. I'll get back to you shortly with more information. Just to constantly stay in front of them, or even going into the attachments on MLS. If it's a condo, there'll often be a floor plan there. I'll download the floor plan, send it to them, hold back the features list to say I can request a copy
exactly.
of the home
something
inspection.
Something that requires them to reach out to you, yeah.
Hold back something that gives them the reason to reach out, because, again, sometimes people will reach out about a property. The offer night was last night. It's already sold. Those are tricky because they're no longer interested, but you want to make sure that you give them a reason to keep in contact with you.
So again, we'll break down some of those things you just talked about in a second, but I do want to just come back to the fact that I think it's really important that people know that your processes and systems, starting before the reach out, so before the client reaches out, exact same. You have nothing different than anyone that we teach. Your ads, your drip campaigns, they're the exact, I think we use yours as the base. So we kind of, you know, I think, so you're not doing anything differently, nothing.
No.
Now, once you might be spending more money, and then once people actually reach out to you, I think then that's where you kind of shine, which is what we're going to talk about now. But it is important that people understand that this isn't like, well, Steph does this and this and this that I don't do. No. Everything, every tool that we've given you, everything we're going to teach you in this program is exactly what Steph does. And it's not really that much. Like it's run an ad, figure out what neighborhood they're in, get them on a drip campaign. And then when they reach out, make sure you're a really good agent.
I was going to say, and then once they reach out, that's when your job steps in.
100%.
So I think that's what's key, is a lot of people might rely on the leads to come to you. A cold lead is never going to follow up with you.
No.
Right? If you do not show them that you are not desperate, but valuable, and someone that they can come to and get good information back, you've got them half in the bag. But if you think that they're going to keep reaching out to you, that is very rare. I've maybe had that happen a couple times and turned out to not even be the best clients.
Yeah.
So I think that you know, having that, the systems and all, everything, in your ducks in a row for how to capture the leads. And then once you capture them, how you follow through with them, having that process in your head. And to me, I can walk you through everything I do, but the biggest thing and the number one success I have to attribute it to is the time.
Yep.
And I learned that very early on, selling timeshare.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, so let's go through. Okay, so We're going to walk through when someone reached out, what happens. I mean, we'll just recap a couple of things you said. The first is just like speed of response. And even if you've got nothing to say, I actually think it's kind of cool if you're at a movie or like out at a dinner to let people know I'm at a dinner. I think it shows that like you're on the ball for them.
Well, you're validating that you're confirming you got their email.
Yeah.
And you're validating that like their time is important to you, but you are out at a commitment. And again, I'm saying this within reason. If you're at your best friend's wedding and you're in the wedding,
of course
you can have an out of response. Like that's when I put an out of office on for even if I know it's going to be 24 hours so that if someone does reach out, they know that that I'm tied up. But I'm acknowledging their email, acknowledging their interest, and I'll get back to them as soon as possible.
And then again, we want to make sure that this is the hardest part to automate. Again, this we've automated the top part and then they're reaching out. But you still do a good job of you know, again, it's a process, which isn't automated, but it's a process. And then there's some things you automate. So the second thing that we talked about that you said was really important to you was you've got a bunch of different email templates saved in Gmail. So you can really, depending on what they've reached out about, that you can kind of use as a base starting point.
Yeah, it's a templated basic. You know, Gmail has the template option as well as Rebump. And so I lean on those once the connection's been made. To make sure that I'm following up, but it also sounds very personal. And
so anyone who's not familiar, again, we talk about Rebump a lot. Rebump's just a little Gmail add-on. We'll actually put a link to it below this video so you can sign up. But it's just a Gmail add-on where you send an email, you can click off a check mark, and if they don't respond to you, it will essentially like remind them that you've sent this email. And you can, as you said, you can customize how it looks.
Yeah, I think you can do up to 4 or 5 Rebumps, which is each Rebump is just a separate email, and it's a follow-up, just saying like, hey, just making sure you got my other email, but you can personalize them. So I personalize them all so they sound a little less like just annoying. For lack of a better word. And then on the templated emails, especially if they reach out about a certain property or they're a long-term buyer lead, you can give them, you know, information that says you've got access to lawyers and mortgage brokers and would love to jump on a call and here's our buyer's guide. You know, those emails take a long time to craft if you did them one at a time.
Yeah.
And that's where people fall off because you might never get a response and you're like, oh God, I spent an hour crafting that email. So create these templates and your life will become so much easier. Just always make sure to remember to change the name.
Yeah, true. The other thing that that you said, which I thought was really great, and you talked about it for a second there, which is provide them with some information on the property that they reached out about. And I think that's really what you said was really neat, which is the hardest part with any online lead, it's actually not even the reach out. It is the reach out, but it's that second one. Once you get that second response.
Yeah.
So they've reached out about the property, and I'm going to ask you in a sec about what percentage you think actually respond to you. But then saying something like, you know, I actually showed this property earlier today. I think there might be a survey on that. Would you be interested in me sending that to you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would be interested. Like that, now you've got them.
Hold back something.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, and that's true of any sales training. You always want to keep them wanting more, and it sounds kind of cruel, but it's the truth. You want to know that they're seriously interested, and if you satisfy all their questions or maybe rule out that property is even of interest to them now, they're not going to respond to you, right? And then another property might pop up, and they ended up talking to another realtor, and you've lost them. So I think it's really important to, you know.
You're doing really good here because you're following the flow of questions because your next one was, what if like they reach out and like there's an offer date that night? What do you do?
Right. Well, and so I always go to the broker. Like think of what they can't see, right? The other thing that I can't stress enough is that all the online leads especially probably have apps like House Sigma, Properly, are on condos.ca all the time. Like they're getting information on their own and they're getting enough, but that can only go so far. Again, so you have to tap into what can you give them that they don't already have access to? So immediately I go straight to the broker remarks. There'll be something in there. It'll say offers anytime. It'll say offer date, this date, home inspection available, status certificate on route, something about the property that they don't know is the broker remarks is because it's always hidden, as well as the attachments. So I always just sift through there to see what's in there. Sometimes it's a boring Schedule B and a Form 801, But you just want to know that you're giving them access to everything. Or what you can also say to them is, here's some information on the property. How I often try and hook them back in is there's an offer date next Tuesday. As you may or may not know, properties are listed often well below their value. If you'd be interested, I can send you a link to some recent sales in the area so you can get a sense of what things were listed for versus what they sold for, and we can set up a call to go through them or meet at the property to discuss itself in person. So you want to.
But even more, again, I love that, like, that comes back to that mindset, right? Which is if someone reached out to you, you looked up the property and the offer nights that night, you're not like, oh, I give up. You're like, let's go see it. Like, it offer nights tonight, but why don't we go see it anyway?
Yeah, you say, like, I'd still be happy to meet you there to show you the property. It's a great way to educate yourself on what things are listed for versus what they sell for. Pictures are deceiving. So I'd be happy to meet you there if you wanted to, provided you don't have an agent.
And I think if you're listening to this and your mindset is, well, you know, what a waste of my time. Like, there's no chance that they're going to even make an offer that night. It's too fast. It's too rushed. I mean, if you're on the other side where you're going to rush them into it, that's probably not a good thing either. But if your mentality is that, why would I go meet them? It's too rushed. Then you're already in the wrong place. You shouldn't be doing this because Steph's going to beat you because she'll put the time in knowing that there's probably zero chance they're going to make an offer on that property because her process understands that getting in front of them is the win in the long term.
I would say too, like, just to reiterate, the amount of people that I've shown, that the amount of business that I've done from online leads is strong, but the amount of online leads that have actually closed on the property they've reached out on, that Wellington guy is probably one of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Of the however many there have been. It's very, very rare that they end up actually buying. And that's true of open houses too, right? Like, I think open houses and online leads follow very similar trajectories in terms of how they purchase a property with you. So I wouldn't, you know, when you have to change your mentality, if you're going to that showing, you're going to get a new client and to establish a relationship with a potential new buyer, not to sell them necessarily that house. Because if you think you're just going to close it on that one, how many times, even if it's a returning client, do you show them one place and they get the place and it's game over? It's a slam dunk. Sure, that's great if that happens, but that's not the norm. That's more of an anomaly.
And here's as we're talking about this, I think the other thing that is like the cardinal sin of online leads is person reaches out to you, wants to go and see a property. Offer nights are, say it's on a Tuesday. Offer nights next Tuesday. Oh, let's just go see it on Saturday. You're done.
You're done.
Because again, it's just like, oh, there was a bully offer last night or something happens, right? Or they go to an open house and now they've got the other person. Like, yeah. If it's not just the follow-up, if you don't get in front of them as fast as you can, I mean, these people don't know you. Once they meet you, they're like, oh, I like Steph. She's like got a doll, like a son, like, you know, I feel bad if I don't use her, like whatever. If they don't know you, they can't feel bad. I mean, I know it sounds bad, but it's just true. Want a human connection.
They have no loyalty to you at this point, right? And they owe you nothing. So I can't agree with you more in terms of the speed at which you respond to the initial email is super important. Again, I'm not trying to stress people out that it has to be within minutes, but in a reasonable time.
There's stats that show you it's going to be like a minute.
Of course, but if it's 3 a.m., we don't expect you to respond. But if they are expressing interest and you can get in front of them the next day or the day after, like if there's an offer date next Tuesday, unless it says like no preemptive offers and the only reason you can't go until Saturday is because of their schedule, try and get them in sooner.
Sure.
Right? So I think that's a really, really important part because as soon as you're in front of them, again, that's where you will shine if you are comfortable and excited and interested in taking on a new buyer. But again, shifting the mindset out of, I'm going to for sure sell them this house. Of course, that's what they're interested in. But be very open to the fact that they may end up looking at a house in Leslieville with you and then buying a house in High Park with you.
Yeah, fair enough. Sounds like you've done that before.
All the time.
And you know, one of the things that I think is really, that I love talking to you about this with Steph specifically, not that you're not an exceptional, but you're not a pushy salesperson. So if people are thinking that you've got to be, you know, like super over the top aggressive to close these types of people, like I asked Steph before we started, I was like, when you get there, do you ask for the business? And you're like, not really. I mean, I kind of just, you know, act professional and, you know, show them who I am. And
yeah,
and I from think, there, it's like, again, you don't have to be like grinding these people to the bone.
Yeah, I think that's also like first and foremost a personality trait, right? If you are a little bit more forward, that's great. And it will probably work for a lot of situations. But I also think there's value in taking a step back and letting people kind of come to you when you're especially when you're on a showing. You're really there to open the door and then open the door to yourself and gently suggesting things. And if they feel like you're desperate or you're chasing them and you know, it is like dating. Like if they sense that you're desperate for a callback or a second date or something, they might feel a little bit like
pressure
and away you go. So I usually always end the conversation and I say like absolutely no pressure whatsoever, no strings attached, but like I would love to continue exploring properties with you, whether it's this one or another one. So if you're interested in that, we can explore and see how that relationship works.
Okay, so let's just recap a little, because we're going to talk about post-meeting here for a second. But I think, you know, up to this point, we've sort of established that it's, you know, we've got to spend lots of money. We have to have a realistic expectation.
As much as you can.
Yep. Yeah, as much as you can. You got to get them on these neighborhood trips, because that's where, you know, really before they have an allegiance to you, it's getting them the properties. Then they're reaching out. You're getting on top of them as quickly as possible, you know, holding something back to create that conversation. And now we've gotten in front of them. Don't need to be crazy salesy and pushy. What are you doing post-meeting? How are you now? How are you making sure? Because now it's a loyalty thing. Now it's like, I've met you. So let's just start with, I think I asked this later, but what percentage of the people that would you say that you think actually reach out to you online that you get in front of?
How many people that I
like property get? Information requests, showing requests?
I'd probably say about 50%.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
So again, remember that we're talking about that. That's like Steph might get 1,000 people that come in and 3 reach out to her from 1,000, and then 1.5 you're meeting in front of. That's fine.
Yeah.
And then of those people that you actually meet, what percentage of those do you think you close or that stay loyal to you once you've gotten in front of them?
I'd say that's a higher conversion for sure.
Like at least 50?
I'd say 50. You know, some of them, their circumstances change. You know, another thing you can do when you do get in front of these people, if you're reading the situation and the scenario and you can tell the house or the condo is just not for them, you know, ask them about where they live without being too aggressive, and then say, you know, I'd be happy to come by sometime and give you a free evaluation. We can chat further.
Okay, so obviously your close rates are really high, so you must be doing something really good post-meeting. So let's talk about the post-meeting. You know, once you've sat down with these people or met with them at the property, let's go back through kind of like what your next steps are. I know you talked about at the meeting, mentioning them at the very end or some part through the process that you've got like a mortgage team and a lawyer. So what do you do, you know, once you get home?
Yeah. So once you're finished the showing and you've established that they're interested and looking, whether they're interested in that specific property, I often ask at the end of the meeting if they're interested in being put in touch with our mortgage team or our lawyers. If they are interested in being in contact with the mortgage team, I'll send them an introduction between the two of them, which I think is a huge hook for us. Because
that's
now,
the key, right? It's not just like saying, here's the contact details. It's actually making the connection.
Yeah, because then they'll send an email saying, you know, here's a link to my calendar, book in a call. And they, you know, together, both parties now are working in combination to really show the amount of service we provide to one client.
Yeah.
And the mortgage team, typically, if you're working with especially Outline, is going to be pumping your tires during that meeting and sending them a note beforehand just saying, like, these are new clients, like, please feel free to speak kindly about me.
Sometimes the people that you meet don't actually transact right away. I mean, it might be like 2 or 3 months down the road. Like they might go cold for a bit and come back, right?
Yeah,
you
know, but the financing piece is key. No matter where they are in the process, if they're willing to speak to someone on the financing team, if they don't have a pre-approval, if they're just starting out, if they're looking in 6 months, just a simple conversation about where they're at can then segue into a whole part of your search with them. So I think it's a great way to follow up. If they have their own mortgage broker or say they've been pre-approved, the follow-up is much more, you know, nice meeting you today. Here's some further information on the property. Maybe there's a home inspection. Maybe there's a status certificate. Just giving them a little bit more or a link to some other properties that might suit their needs, or asking them for a more concise breakdown of what they're really looking for. Because even if they're in the neighborhood tracker, that's great, but you might get more information from them directly that the neighborhood tracker would never pick up.
So let's talk about that, because I think this is where you really get into your rhythm here, right? So, you know, in order to get them to reach out, they're in our system. It doesn't have to be, you know, everyone can do their own thing, but in our system, they've been getting emails from our IDX. They've reached out about a property. You've shown them. Now you actually take them off of our IDX and put them into your own. You put them either into Colab or you know, MLS, the prospect search. So tell us about that process and why that's important to you.
That's important to me. The biggest thing is probably because in the MLS system, you have access to everything you need and that they don't have, right? So as I think I said at the beginning of this, is the attachments. Look through there, see what's in those that a client.
And you again, you don't just let these people just get the drips automatically. That's where it kind of changes the process for you here, right? Is like now you become integrated in that process.
Yeah, for sure. I want to see what they're actually looking for rather than just being in our campaigns. That's great. They can keep going with those just to make sure they don't miss anything, or the way that the setup comes in, I know, is different. Obviously, the MLS system's a little bit more old school, but it allows me to go in and open up their file on a weekly, biweekly, two to three times a week, and just make sure we haven't missed anything and show that my eyes are wide open to a property that might interest them. Because the last thing you want to do is set them up, think that they're automated, and never talk to them again, hoping they're going to come back to you. They still want to be approached by you.
And this is an important part of the mentality of people, you know, really understanding what makes someone tick, right? Why is an online lead bad? Well, sometimes they're bad because they're not ready in the market. That's one of the things that they will be ready at some point. Are you going to be there for them? The second is because just assuming, you have to assume that each person that reaches out to you is on 10 other drips, mm-hmm. right? They're getting this information from other people. The difference is that I think, again, it's these little things that you do that make people want to work with you. As opposed to just letting the drip do all of the work, you're going in and saying, hey, I looked at number two here. I think this one's great for you because of X, Y, and Z. And so now all of a sudden they know that you're working for them. That could be the whole difference between why they use you.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And don't underestimate. I think a lot of people, they do. They want to automate all this. And as we're going through this, you automate as much as you can, but really where you win the business is when you start to create that human.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, we've talked about this a lot. I talk about this in all my podcasts. I talk about it in a negative way, but this human guilt, but it's really human capital. It's around the people feeling that, again, we can use it in a positive way by saying that you earn the business, you work hard for the business and earn it, but the clients aren't going to beg you to do that. So you got to go and do this. And I think that's really where you start to separate yourself here, is you've got to really, we'll talk in a second about your check-in emails, but it starts really with the property searches, right? With you moving them over into an area that you're comfortable with, and then being super proactive about looking at the properties on a regular basis and making comments about them. And it really starts there, doesn't it?
For sure. And that's where I just think you've got to be personal with them and make them feel like you are investing your time, and it always comes back to time and service. And I think that's a good way to show right out of the gate. Follow up, I usually send them a follow up email within an hour of meeting them at the house too. Like, everything is so time sensitive at the outset. If it falls off later on, they probably weren't that serious. But if you're on them and they're serious, you'll take them out the next week, right? You'll send them an email the next day about what that property sold for. You'll be in constant contact the same way you would be with anyone else if you establish that you're working for them right away.
And if you have nothing to say to them, again, this is funny, but it's true. If people feel like if there's nothing to report or nothing to say, then say nothing at all, and you don't take that approach. Your check-ins are just like, just checking in.
Or I'll say something like, you know, I'm just checking in. It's been a while since we've connected. I just want you to know I'm still here. And if there's anything you want me to tweak in your search, like criteria, listings are low right now. Just, again, it can you don't want it to go stale for too long, because then they'll be like, oh, that she moved on. She's clearly not that interested in me.
Yeah.
Again, it's like.
And how often would you do that? Like, what's your kind of process for that?
So if I haven't heard back from anyone in a bit and they're getting the emails and I know they're on their, they've got the listings coming in and I know they're not on vacation, I would try and check in at least once a week. And it probably sounds funny to be like, just checking in, nothing to say, no pressure to respond. But most people do respond and say like, we're all good. Nothing's interested us lately. Or they say like, whoa, we can't believe that one ended up going for
sure.
X.
Like, that's another good thing to reach out to. Hey, are you interested in like, do you have any questions about what something went for? I can help you with that.
Exactly. And sometimes they'll want to talk that through as to like, we're now a little bit defeated because the list price, there's a learning curve. There's a lot to understand with the list price versus the sale price. So I just think you've got all that knowledge to give them and how offers work and when offers, what's a bully offer. You know, making sure that they're always the priority and getting the access to the information that you have.
This is a bit of a step back, but I want to make sure we cover this because I think it's really important. One of the things, too, that's really important to do, again, there's a bit of a balancing act here, but when people reach out to you initially, sometimes they think you're the listing agent and they think maybe originally that that's an important, that's something that's good for them, which we know it's not for the most part. And so you don't always want to just immediately respond and say, just want to let you know I'm not the listing agent. You're not trying to be, you know, you're not trying to hide anything here, but you do want to get in front of them. And then when you get in front of them, you obviously let them know that why it's important that they have representation.
For sure. And I think, again, with the amount of listings they're getting, people typically, if they're on the campaigns, they usually figure it out that you don't have every single listing that they're getting, but not always. Sometimes there is some confusion. So on the listing appointment, I'll usually say one thing, just to be clear, I always check if they have their own agent before going and just say, I don't want to step on anyone's toes. And they're very typically very forthcoming with it. And if they say, I have an agent, then you know not to go. And if they say, I don't want to go anymore, then you know they weren't serious. But once you're there, I just kind of say, like, look, the seller has got their own representation. Offers are being done next Tuesday with the listing agent. Kind of some casual comments that make it clear you're not the representing the seller. And then if they, you know, seem interested in that part of it, you can explain why. It's risky and in their best interest to have their own representation. And
And one of the best strategies I think that you can utilize, and this is something that I think everyone should be doing and something that I used to do back in the day, which is because of that concept that people potentially think that you're the listing agent, they may go and book a showing with you and another person. That is the cardinal sin of online leads. Like, you have to let them know that you're the one-stop shop, that they can get everything through you. So When someone reaches out about a property, your first order of business is to see what's around it that's similar to it. Maybe nothing, as we talked about. With current inventory, it might be tough. And then letting them know, hey, I've got these other three. Would you like to go see them all together?
Yeah.
Because now you're preemptively letting them know that I'm your realtor for all the properties you're going to go look at. And again, the more time you spend with them, I think the better chance you have of closing them.
For sure. And I think you can also just say something as simple as, if there's anything else in the area that you're interested in seeing, like, please let me know. It also signifies that you're not selling them that specific house. And I think that's key to also establishing trust, just going back to kind of, you know, pointing out something that they should be aware of. It doesn't have to be scary, but it just something, you know, oh, that parking pad out front, there's a note here, it's not legal. You can still use it. The owners used it. It's like a grandfather type system, but it just know it's not legal, meaning the city could take it back at any point in time. But yeah, just pointing out something that they might not know about the property that would make it clear that you're looking out for their best interest.
So let's go through the last question again. I think it's really important that people understand here that it's not rocket science. There's little things that you do where you kind of start with system, you start with money, you move to systems, then you move to your post follow-up, which is where obviously you start to become more human. And we've got some really great things from you there in terms of what your approach is, you know, inserting yourself into the automatic property drips to let people know that you're actually keeping an eye on things and working for them. You know, that you are there to show them more than one property, like that you, and that kind of presumptively shows that you want more of their business. You're doing check-ins, even if there is nothing to check in on sometimes, just to let them know that you're thinking about them and that you're on top of it. But how do you keep a positive mentality and a mindset when like most of these people will never do business with you? You know, like out of 1,000 people that come into your database, there's maybe one or two that close. So how do you stay positive on the fact that this is a good piece of your business?
I don't know if I touched on it earlier, but I think the most important thing to that is knowing that if you stick with it, it will work out eventually. And staying busy for me is super important. And even if I go see a property and they stand me up, I'm still working. I'm still out. I'm checking out a property. I can put it on my Instagram that I'm out and about. Whatever it is, just think of it in a way of you're constantly bettering yourself as a realtor, even if you're getting shut down, because you will. You will lose clients. You'll get people that tell you no thanks. You'll have people that you take out that end up going radio silent. It's just the way it is in most sales, especially in real estate, and just keeping at it. And I think doing a variety of ways to prospect and find new clients is the best way to combat that. Because if you're just focusing on online leads, you're going to start wanting to bang your head against the wall. Because,
well, again, this is a big part of your business, but it's still only 25 or 30% of your business. So, you know, how important to you was it that you had, like, do you think if you had just been doing this and you went 6 months without a deal that you would have a different, like you would have stuck with it? Or is it because you were busy, you had other clients?
Yeah, I think it's confidence. Like everything comes back to being, you know, positive and confident about what you're doing and not looking at it as, oh, I'm wasting my time. Because in my mind, like people might be in essence wasting your time because they're not going to buy that house, but you're not wasting your time because you're out there learning about new properties, seeing things, like watching the market, you're constantly educating yourself. You might see something in a house in a home inspection that you didn't know about before. And I just think as long as you look at it as every minute you spend out there in the field doing property, looking at listings and doing buyer visits, even if they work out or they don't, you're just becoming a better agent.
And again, I think that's okay for most people. Like most people aren't going to be cut out for this. They're not going to want to spend the money. They're going to have a negative outlook on it. That's okay. I mean, don't fight this. It's not something that, I mean, I think if you really want to expand your business, it's something you should be looking at. But if it's something that you already have a negative feeling on, you know, again, it doesn't have to be for everybody, right? So if it is right for you, I think some of the steps and the tools that Steph has talked to you about are just, again, you don't need to think beyond that. It's a really simple stuff. Follow the process, invest your money,
don't lose sleep over it, right? Yeah. Like it's going to work out. As the longer you keep doing it, it will work out eventually. And I think also as you, you know, gain more and more business and clients and referrals and people that do work with you right off the bat, as you get more and more listings or your advertising listings, they will come. But because you've got listings that even just sellers want you to be doing. So I think it will just all kind of start to flow naturally, and you'll approach an online cold lead the same way you would if you were showing up with someone you knew.
Right? I think that's like the perfect thing to end with. It's like all the things we talked about today, the reason that we kind of segment online leads is because we've got to work so much harder to get them. Mm-hmm. But you should treat every client like this with a sense of urgency, with some of the things you're talking about, like, you know, checking in regularly, interjecting yourself in some of the automations and making sure people know that you're actually paying attention. These are things that don't just assume their referral is going to close with you. Like, you need to earn their business and you need to earn their referrals too,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So all the stuff we talked about today, even like setting people, like track your own friends and put them on the drips. Like, all that type of stuff is really important. And I think the last thing, again, we kind of went through this before, but one of the things that we didn't touch on today, which I think is really important, is just tell us a little bit about, you know, again, our agents have such an advantage with our content program because there's a trust and a value that's delivered that they don't even know about. So how many, you know, when you're working with some of these people, like, do they ever make comments about, you know, things they've, like, I've been following you forever or this or that?
Oh, for sure. All the time. And I have, like, you know, I have no idea that they're getting my links for a year or 2 years. Some people even still refer to the Blue Elephant logo because they transferred over when we made the change. So don't underestimate the people that are in there, even if they're not talking to you. That's another thing I would really want to emphasize, is that there's business in there, even when you're like, when I know you.
Yeah, you've had people show up to events and buy pre-construction properties and all kinds of things, and you're like, I had no idea this person was even paying attention.
Exactly, and they're there, and they're doing it on their own terms, and they'll engage when they're ready to engage. And just, yeah, I would just say, just because it's not working today doesn't mean it's going to work. Doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow. And I think it's a great supplement to your business. But, you know, doing everything in conjunction together will make you feel more motivated and optimistic.
Yeah.
But just know that even if you're spending $2,000 on online leads and you don't see anything from it for 6 months, then you get one deal
and
it paid
ROI.
And it paid for itself and then some, and then you become a believer.
Yeah.
Right. So you just have to stick with it and just stay, you know, stay open-minded.
And I think, again, it's for our agents, I just really want them to feel comfortable with the fact that they have a huge advantage. There's those additional supportive pieces that we're doing are specifically good for online leads, because they're taking, again, all these other companies. You have to understand the simplicity of this is like Connells.ca, you know, House Sigma, whatever they are, they're sending sold prices and listings. There's nothing else beyond that. There's no substance to it. There's no market report. There's no, you know, events and workshops. There's no international properties. There's no, you know, the things that we do for our agents should make them feel more confident running this type of business, not less confident. So I hope people get out of that. And if you combine this sort of what we're doing and some of the best practices that we talked about today, I think it's a recipe for success.
It's a good start.
Okay. Well, thanks, Steph.
Thanks, guys.
No one knows, but we actually did this twice, so we tried our best.
Yeah, we'll just see a little glitch in the system.
Thanks, Steph. We'll see you on the next one.
Yeah.